Most people don't think about murder and suspense, I don't think, when they think about Lake Geneva. But I tell you what, our guest does. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to be having some fun talking with Danielle Lincoln Hanna. She has the second book in her Mailboat Suspense series. It's set in Lake Geneva. The second book just out, and we're going to be talking with her about the setting and about the unique ways that she's presenting the series that she's working on. And I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. Maybe you've read book one. You probably wouldn't have had time to read book two yet. Maybe. What are some of your comments about it, or maybe your favorite summer reads? Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. Danielle Lincoln Hanna with me in the studio. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
I enjoyed book one in the series. I enjoyed
Good.
Book two, although I'm frustrated at these cliffhanger endings.
Spoilers.
But we'll talk. We can talk about that. But I think it's an interesting story first about how you came, because you're not from Wisconsin.
No, I'm not.
How the heck you came to write a mystery series set in Lake Geneva?
Oh, my gosh. It has been such a wild ride, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. But yeah, it seems really appropriate to mention that this whole thing got started actually with public television. Mm-hmm. So this goes back to the autumn of 2009 to one evening when I was just bored out of my wits and flipping channels. And from there, it came down to a series of coincidences. So I don't watch TV much in general, mm-hmm. but that night I was. I'm originally from North Dakota, and that's where I was living at the time. And for some reason, in North Dakota, we get not only North Dakota public television, but also Minnesota public television. And I'm not sure why, but Minnesota public television also plays at least one or two programs from Wisconsin.
Sure.
So one of those was Outdoor Wisconsin. And for some reason, they decided to re-air like this 10-year-old story that they'd done on the Mailboat. And so I just happened to catch it. And I've been a writer my whole life. I've been writing since I was 4 years old. So it's not unusual for me to be picking up story ideas wherever I can find them. And I remember I quit flipping channels and I just sat there and stared at the screen in complete fascination, just watching these young people jumping on and off the boat, delivering the mail around the lake. And when I was done, I turned off the TV, walked away, and by the time I left the living room, all the major pieces of the story were in place in my head. And I was like, okay, I got something to work on here.
Oh, it's a great story. And for those who aren't... maybe haven't seen the public TV thing or haven't visited Lake Geneva, this has been going on for over 100 years.
Yeah, so it's officially had its 100th anniversary back in 2016. Mm-hmm. And basically, the way the show goes, they've been delivering the mail this way because they didn't have good roads way back in the day.
And these are for all the homes that live around the lake.
You can get your mail delivered by boat. So what they do is they have this great big old tour boat, and then they have these young people, usually high school and college kids, who get a summer job there. And it's their job to take the mail, stand out on the front of the boat, jump off at the pier, run to the mailbox, which is on the pier, shove the mail in, take any outgoing mail, turn around, run back to the boat. Now, the boat's so big that it's very awkward to try to stop at every pier, so they don't. It just keeps going. So these poor young people have to deliver the mail and get back on the boat before it's gone. And I've timed it, and like they say 30 seconds, it's not. It's like 5 seconds to get the mail in and back. And if they miss it, they go in the lake.
So, you know, that whole business gave you the idea for a murder that happens on Geneva Lake.
Yeah. So usually when I see something interesting that I want to write about, my next question is always, great, where am I going to put the body? So this one felt a little obvious. I was just going to have my mail jumper miss the boat, land in the lake, and find a body at the end of the pier. So
Now, you say that you write... hearth and homicide suspense.
This is
never heard of that genre before. talk about it.
Well, my boyfriend likes to call it possibly the first ever cozy thriller. So the way I like to describe it is kind of Alfred Hitchcock meets Hallmark movie. So my stories are very much equal parts, the suspense and the thrill and the mystery and the murder, but very, very strongly towards things that are more from the heart and really, really character-driven. It's really about the personalities and the people and the struggle, the more personal struggles that they're going through.
It's really, and maybe set the stage for us and talk a little bit about sort of the overall arc of the book. You've got some main characters. You got Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
Is a male jumper. She is.
Yeah. So the main character is a 16-year-old male jumper named Bailey. Her main arc in the story. So she is a foster child, and she has been since she was very young. So she has really no concept of what it's like to have a stable, consistent family, because she has just been bounced around in the foster care system for years. And it's just her deepest desire just to have a family or someone who loves her. And but at the same time, just having been so burnt, really, by all of her experiences, that she's very much afraid of actually, like, reaching out and accepting what might be around her.
Jaded. Maybe a bit jaded, I guess.
I don't know about jaded, but
jaded's
just afraid.
The wrong word.
I would think afraid, yeah.
Afraid's probably more like it.
Yeah.
And there are, and so, she doesn't get murdered, but.
Not yet.
Not yet, anyway, but. I doubt that she will.
It'll be awkward.
You'd really make me mad if you do that.
You know what? I'll make a note of that.
But then it's all the people around her, including a couple of cops who were had been once married, the boat captain, Tommy, Bailey's foster father.
But, yeah, I see that sneer on your face.
And then there's a kind of another kid who's about her age, I think. Jimmy is a science nerd. And then you've got some other people like Roland, the rich banker who lives on the lake. So
yeah, there's really just this whole ensemble in the series, and they kind of each get their turn to tell a part of their story. But the four main characters are Bailey, the male jumper, Tommy, who is the mailboat captain, and he's like the one person in her world who has just been remarkably stable and reliable, and so she really looks up to him, but again, she's very afraid to like reach out to what's around her. And then the other two main characters are Ryan, who is a police officer who is just returning to his hometown of Lake Geneva and working bicycle patrol for the summer. Mm-hmm. And Monica, who is actually his ex-wife, and so things get really awkward and they bump into each other again. And she is also a police detective in Lake Geneva. So
those are the main characters. And you did mention that you write from their point of view, and I thought it was an interesting way to do it. Each chapter is you're writing from whoever's featured in that chapter, from their point of view.
Right. We call it first person. So like Bailey sits down and says, and I did this and I felt this and this is what I said. And it's extraordinarily unusual to have more than one first person point of view.
Yes.
But I gave a first person to all four main characters, and I was very hesitant to do that because it's quite easy to confuse your reader doing that, because they're like, well, who is I this time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I took that risk was because when I tried, I almost always write my characters in first person when I start out, because I find I can just get closer to them when I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to just switch them over to third later, but when I tried, I lost so much of their voice and so much of their personal touch that I said, this is not working. And I said, well, I'm just going to take this risk and have four main characters each talking in first person, and each chapter just has their name at the top to help you know who it is. And I've had a lot of readers tell me that, you know, it took them a second to catch on, but once they did, they loved it because they did feel so close to the characters. So I think it was a good risk.
I really do think that it's you get much better idea about the character. You learn a lot about each individual character this way. And I frankly really enjoyed that approach. Although you're right, you know, the first couple of chapters, wait a minute, what's it? You know, but it doesn't take long.
Oh, good, good.
And you're putting the person's name even at the top of of the chapter. So you know right away where you're going.
Right, yep.
And obviously, logically, as people appear throughout, they're appearing along the, of course, along the arc of the story.
So. Right, yeah.
We are talking today with Danielle Lincoln Hanna. She writes the Hearth and Homicide Suspense. She writes Hearth and Homicide Suspense, and she's got two books out now in this series, and it's the Mailboat Suspense series set in Lake Geneva. The first of her books was called The End of the Pier, and the second, which is just out, really, is called The Silver Helm, a great mystery series so far, and I'm enjoying, I've enjoyed the first two and certainly looking forward to the next few in the series, however many there are. You can join in with your own questions or comments. Maybe it has to do with writing and this form of writing. Maybe it has to do with Lake Geneva itself. Maybe it has to do with the book. Have you read The End of the Pier yet? Or maybe getting the Silver Helm? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. We'd certainly love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller. Sarah Hopeful, our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. And you, my friends, are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Danielle Lincoln Hanna. She is the author of the Mailboat Suspense series. The first book is The End of the Pier. The second, just coming out, The Silver Helm. Great suspense murder book set in Lake Geneva. And I'm really happy to have her with me here in the studio. Questions or comments? Lots of people calling in, but there's a line for you at 1-800-642-1234. And you know, when I said murder, you know, people get killed, but your writing is such that you're not going into the gory details. You talk about that a little bit, will you? I mean, you sort of got at that earlier, but...
Yeah, you know, there's always this spectrum when it comes to various elements of any story, like how much romance are you going to put in, how deep are you going to go into the bedroom scenes, stuff like that. And violence is definitely one of those two. And I never wanted it to be repulsive, for certain. I kind of had a notion who my readership was going to be, what they were going to be like, what kind of taste they were going to have. And I was like, you know, they're going to want the drama and the excitement, but we don't need to make it the kind that makes you cringe, you know.
Yeah.
It'll be in the story. And the way I use violence, it's never just for the violence. If somebody's going to get hurt or killed, I want you to feel something. I want you to know that person. I want you to have an emotional connection to them before whatever happens or after whatever happens. So, yeah, that's usually how I work with it.
You know, we should take some calls here. Vicki in Wausau, we'll give you a chance first. Hi, Vicki. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having your guest on.
Sure.
I wanted to say that just for the fact that you did write each person in first person, like you said, makes me want to read it because that's some of my favorite books when they're written like that. Like, say, if you read The Poisonwood Bible.
You know, I've
each
not
person
read that one.
You got so emotionally involved in their thought process and why, you know, but then you switch to the next person and their version of what actually happened was so strange. Hmm. It just was really enthralling and very captivating.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
So I'm going to read it just for that.
Sounds good to me.
Vicki, thanks a lot for calling. By the way, how does Vicki or anyone else get copies of your book? Well, we'll repeat this later, but just as long as she's on right now.
For sure. Well, if you're in the Lake Geneva area, there are a number of local shops.
She's in Wausau, but...
well, okay. If you're visiting Lake Geneva, there's the Cornerstone Shop always has copies on hand. They've just got a big shipment of Book 2 in. Breadloaf Bookstore is also carrying it. Geneva Gifts usually carries it. Black Point Museum has carried copies in the past. I might need to restock them right now, but they're definitely on board with that. And then if you want to get it online, they're mm-hmm. always available on Amazon.
And you, on your website, do you sell through your website or not?
No, I don't. I have not wanted to dip into taxes, so I let Amazon handle that.
You let Amazon handle it. And Danielle Lincoln Hannah is the author, and the first book, The End of the Pier, the second, The Silver Helm, so far in mm-hmm. the series. So there you go, Vicki. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's turn to Kurt in Appleton next. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Larry. I just had a quick question for Danielle. And has she spoken to any of the real people in Lake Geneva that work on the mailboat? Because I happen to know Neil, who's the mailboat captain.
Oh, my gosh.
I just wonder what their reaction is if you talk to them.
Yes, I did. In fact, I came for my first research trip to Lake Geneva in the summer of 2014, and I've been back every year since. And yes, I got to meet Captain Neil in person. He was amazing. He definitely knows who I am, and I'll be taking the mailboat tour while I'm in the area, so I'm sure I'll be saying hi to him. But yeah, the cruise line was amazingly helpful with my whole research process. When I came for that first research trip, I gave them a call, told them what I was working on, and asked them if I could job shadow them for a few days. And they said, yeah, come on board. And they basically just rolled out the red carpet for me and made everything about my research so easy. They coordinated with me on doing photography of the actual mailboat during an actual mailboat tour for the cover art for the series. So yeah, I've had a pretty wonderful relationship with them. It's been awesome.
That's a great cover too for the book. I really like that.
Thank you.
Your cover. Did you other people there, the police or other folks in
yes.
the Lake Geneva area?
So that same summer, I also kind of bit the bullet and made a very frightening phone call to the police department, and. Talked to them and said, hey, I've got a lot of scenes that are set at your police station. Is there any way I could get a tour? And they kind of misunderstood at first and said, how large is your group? And I said, it's just me. And I said, oh, let's put you through to the lieutenant. But anyway, that said lieutenant and one of the sergeants are now my go-to people. Anytime I have a research question, I can just shoot them an email. And they have sent me just tons of material and photographs and just answers to questions. And they, in fact, read every word I write before it publishes and let me know what is accurate and what is not.
So you've had a lot of practice or a lot of experience now in Lake Geneva, and that certainly had to have helped inform how the book.
Yes. You know, when I realized I was originally going to make it a little bit more generic, but when I realized how unique the mailboat is, it dawned on me that I had to set it here in Lake Geneva. And if I was going to do that, my first audience was going to be here in Lake Geneva. And basically, I realized I had to please these people. I had to do homage to them and make it their story, basically. So I took it very seriously, my research, and just meeting people in the area and getting to know their stories and what life is really like there.
So there you go, Kurt. Danielle knows Neil.
I do indeed.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Were you a jumper on a Lake Geneva mailboat? What would you like to know about the hearth and home suspense genre? Give a call, 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to John in Mountain next. Hi, John. John, are you there? John, are you there?
He heard I write mystery and murder and ran away.
he ran away. Well, John, call back if you want to come back with a question. Actually, a question he had related to books available on audio. Have you?
Oh, I would love to make them available on audio. So I am a self-published author. And while definitely making audiobooks is available to us, it's also really expensive because, of course, we have to pay for voice talent.
Mm-hmm.
And there are different ways you can get that set up. But right now, it's a little beyond my reach. But when it becomes, you know, something that I could do, I am so going to go for it. I would love to have my books in audiobook.
Jill Nadeau, my producer, always loves to listen because she has long drives from parts of Wisconsin to parts almost to Michigan. And so she likes to listen on the audiobooks. Me, I just like the paper. You know, I want to read it that way. Well, I think the idea of publishing your own books. A lot of people, I've interviewed a number of people on the show who have published their own books. What's the amount of work that goes into something like that?
You know, I would say it's a lot of work, but I think the misconception is that it is somehow more work than traditional publishing, to which I would reply that it is simply different work. If you're going to seek traditional publishing, you have to be very patient. Because there are so many people putting books out that it can take years to get an agent's attention, and it can take more years to get a publisher's attention. And at the end of all that, they still expect you to probably do the lion's share of the marketing. They still want to see you going out there marketing your book.
Sure.
So basically, the only difference that I see is that I don't have to wait as long, but I do have to foot all the bills up front.
Mm-hmm.
So my cover art, I paid a wonderful graphics designer who's actually from Europe. Her name is Marina Zukova, and she is phenomenal. I did a little competition, and her artwork just stood out above everybody else's, and so there was no question. But, you know, I have to pay her what she's worth, because she's worth, obviously,
a lot of money.
You've seen her artwork. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
On the one hand, I have to foot those bills, but on the other hand, I also get the creative control. You know, I get to say, I love this artist, therefore I want to work with this artist. But other than that, you know, there's still the work that comes with marketing, but I enjoy that part of the business. So works great for me.
You know, I actually think this could be a pretty cool miniseries or a television series. Make a really cool one.
I've often said that I pity the poor fool whose job it is to write the script, because so much of the drama happens inside the characters' heads, and so much of the conflict is because the characters have no one to turn to and no one to open up to. So usually in TV or in movies, you have characters who dialogue. And so much of my book is not dialogue and people purposefully not dialoguing. And so that's why I say I would be thrilled to have a film or television deal, but I feel very bad for whoever has to write the script.
I don't know. I think, you know.
I'll just say, good luck with that.
I think it'd be a fun experiment or a fun way to, a fun challenge. Let's put it that
way.
There you
go.
It'd be a great challenge.
There you go.
You decided to write or create a series of books rather than just one novel.
I wouldn't say that I decided. I'm actually, like, I know where the story is going. I can see it all in my head, but I'm very poor at planning it out. And when I started writing it, I thought I was writing a standalone novel. And only after I'd written quite a chunk of it did I realize that I had far too much material for one book, and that would be why they have cliffhanger endings.
Mm-hmm. Which drive me crazy.
Yeah, never heard that before.
but you still have to create different storylines for
each character.
Each character in each book, too.
Yeah, and I would not be so bold to say that I create my own stories. I'm actually not that creative. What I am good at is letting go and opening up. So I believe that my stories exist fully created somewhere in the back of my mind, somewhere in my subconscious. And it is my job to just let go and let the story tell itself. And I usually do that by getting to know the characters. And I treat them as if they were real people. And so I don't walk up to them and say, this is your name, this is your story, this is what you do, this is what you're like. I sit back and ask them, who are you? And usually over a course of time, they will tell me. And then it's just my job to get to know them, just like I would a real person.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. How difficult is it to jump from a 16-year-old's mind to a 70-year-old. You've got a 70-year-old as a main character, or from a man to a woman, or back and forth.
Yeah, I would say it all depends on the characters. Some characters are extremely open with me. So Bailey, the 16-year-old, she's right there, and she's like, so let me tell you this, so let me tell you that, much like a 16-year-old does when they've got your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And other characters are not as forthcoming, and they want to be a little bit more private. Sometimes they don't seem to want to have their story told. And for that said 70-year-old Tommy, he was not that keen on having his story told, and he's probably the most difficult character I've ever had to write because I had to spend so much time asking him for his story.
Well,
and I would say we've written two books together, me and this character, Tommy, and he's finally gotten to the point where he's okay with working with me.
Yeah. But, you know, he's a long way from you in terms of age. I mean, he's 70, and you're probably late
20s.
You're
30, actually, yeah.
Yeah, you're 30. Okay, so there's 40 years difference there.
Yes, and I would say it's been... You know, when I go out and write a character who is, you know, in ways so different from me... I always wonder, you know, I hope I'm doing this right. But I've always been someone who likes to watch people. You know, I've not mm-hmm. always been a talker. I've gotten better at talking, but I've always been somebody who likes to watch people. And after a while, you just get a feel for them, I think. And so you get a feel for, and this is how a 70-year-old moves, and this is how a 70-year-old talks, and this is how a 70-year-old thinks, and these are the values they seem to have. And so that helps me a lot in being able to write somebody who, you know, who may be so different from me. I think more of the challenge, though, not just like age differences or gender differences, is sometimes experiences. You know, so this main character, Tommy... has been estranged from his son.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here saying, what must it be like to have been hurt so badly by your child? And I've never been a parent, so I'm also sitting here saying, what is it really like to be a parent and have a mm-hmm. child? And so that, I think, those were some of the places that stretched me the most in being like, what is it really like, you know? I've certainly had relationships that fell apart with people that were close to me, but it was kind of like, you know, these are people who are older than me. And so it felt a little backwards, a little upside down, but I said, well, it must be related. So it must feel something like this, but just turned around maybe. So.
Talking with Danielle Lincoln Hanna about her Mailboat Suspense series. You have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share. I hope you'll join in. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Also, email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. How do you decide which character we get to hear from?
Like which one next?
Mm-hmm.
It's usually very chronological. Mm-hmm. You know, I try to keep very strict attention to what day of the week is this, what time of day is this, what happened next, and which character do we need now to tell that next part of the story. So sometimes this leads me to a few problems because I like it when every chapter is a new character, which I wasn't able to do all the time, especially in book one. There's this one long stretch where it all happens in the middle of the night and everybody else is in bed. So I end up being stuck with this one character for multiple chapters. But sometimes you have to just work with whatever you got. And so I decided to stay chronological, and that's how that happened.
Yeah, I was trying to think of book two. There may be a couple of times where you went with the same person once or twice, maybe.
Possibly. I think book two saw a lot more of, and we just bounced between these two characters for a few chapters.
There was a lot of bouncing back and forth there. Jimmy, the science nerd, he's an interesting kid, and I thought, I was thinking about myself at the age of 16 and some of the kinds of angst that I went through, and I could certainly relate. Not as smart as him. I wasn't at 16, but...
So, Jimmy's a new character in book two, and he is a 16-year-old like Bailey. They go to the same school together, and he has this massive crush on Bailey. And, again, it was another instance of me opening up and saying, all right, who's the character? And it was kind of funny because I almost missed him. I just had this feeling like there was some boy that was going to be important in book two and that was going to drive a lot of the plot. And I wasn't quite sure who he was. And I found myself just writing this rather incidental scene that happened to mention this dishwasher at the restaurant where Bailey works. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, wait a minute, that's him, isn't it? Yeah. And then I paid a little bit more attention to him from then on. And he turned out to be quite the dynamic character. Like you said, very scientifically minded and very smart. Certainly more smart than I was, which was a problem for a long time until I found some other people who were certainly better at their science than I was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And had them read my chapters and fix them up for me. I met my boyfriend during that time, and it turns out he's very much into science, which was
helped.
Kind of a salvation for me. I was like, read these. Where am I going wrong? So he was awesome for that.
And speaking of where are you going, on the from one book to the next, because this is a series, mm-hmm. it would be, I mean, to my mind, it would be easier to start with one and go to two. Do you try, you know, between one and two, did you try to, I was trying to remember how that went, but would you be able to pick up number two before number one?
I really don't recommend that people do.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't either, but yeah. I just wondered if you had thought much about trying to, you know, for the person who just was picking up.
Just picking up two and just trying to help them out in case they decided to start there. Basically, I market book one. I'm like, just start there. And I threw in a few cues in the beginning of book two, but mostly for people who had already read book one to help them remember who these people are and what happened last time. But it's definitely, like I said, I originally thought it was going to be a single standalone novel. And so I've had to break it up into, you know, books you could still carry under one arm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's very much meant to be read in order. And if you try to start at book two, you'll probably be very lost. You might still be interested, but you'll spend the whole time really wondering who these people are and what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. I was flashing back to another author, Louise Penny. I don't know if you've read her.
No, I haven't.
She's a mystery Canadian who writes the Inspector Gamache series, of which I think she's written 13 or 14
wow.
of that book. But I didn't know her at all and happened to pick up one of her books at a bookstore. It was on sale. You know, it's one that had been out for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just bought it. Oh, Canadian author. Let me try that out. And I read the book and I really enjoyed the book.
Mm.
But then there were... When I then decided to go back and read the ones in front of it, there were, unfortunately, some things in the middle of the series, that book that I picked up, that sort of clued me in on as I was reading the earlier books.
Ah.
Gave me information that I thought, oh, darn it, why? Why
yep.
didn't I start at the beginning?
Yeah.
So I actually then went back and bought the first books, and
there you go, yeah.
and from then on,
yeah.
read them in order.
For sure. I think it's getting more popular to have stories that need to be read in order, but yeah.
She's an interesting writer because she writes a bit like you in a way, because her... she doesn't go into gory details mm-hmm. on the murders, but there's always a fair amount of suspense around them.
Right.
And you're, you know, wondering how things are going to go for those people. So
yep.
it's...
Cool.
And so in that regard, I think you're right, very similar to her.
Oh, I might have to check her out then.
Jeff in La Crosse has something for you. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Great. Appreciate the call.
I read a lot of mysteries, and so I'm especially interested in today's program, and again, especially because they take place here in Wisconsin. And so I looked up Ms. Hannah's books on Amazon and see that they're getting really good reviews, and then scroll down and see that she has another book out that's not in the Mailboat series called The Fugitive, getting great reviews. But that it's only one chapter, and also it's on Kindle, and I just read the print. So just wanted to find out about that.
Okay, so that was actually, it's called Flash Fiction. So it's fiction that's supposed to be like really super short. And I forget what even inspired me to write that piece, but it was years ago. And it's literally, it's like a page long. And I first got it published in a magazine. And when the rights reverted to me, I kind of shrugged and said, well, I may as well make it into an ebook and throw it up there because that's all I've got out right now other than Mailboat Book One. Mm-hmm. And some people, I don't really advertise that it's there, but some people who are apparently very hungry for more of my work will go out there and find it and read it. And the comment I think it keeps getting is, great, I want to hear the rest of the book. And I'm like, sorry, that's all there is.
Yeah. So maybe down the road that could turn into a book as well.
It could. It's got a historical setting, and I love historical settings, but I'm big into my research and getting things right. And historical intimidates me a little bit because there's just so, like, I can't take anything for granted. I have to find out, you know, what everything was made out of and was it even invented yet? But I would love to delve into that someday. People are going to have to wait longer for that book to come out. But
but yeah, because you've got this series that you're working on, and there's more books in the works there. A third, for sure.
The third, and I've got a lot of that written already. And I'm thinking there might be 6-ish books in the series, but we've already established that I'm bad at gauging that. So.
Jeff, thank you for calling. Let's go to another Jeff, this one in Middleton. Jeff, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Danielle.
Hello.
Danielle, you said something that just really inspired me. You were speaking about when you get into character creation, how the characters, once you kind of get them somewhat established, they tell you who they are.
Yes.
And my question to you is, does that happen to you in dreams sometimes?
You know, I wish it would happen more often. I actually don't dream very much, and a lot of that goes back to a wish I had as a child because my dreams tended to be really weird and really unnerving. And I remember I just said a prayer one day, and I said, please, don't let me dream at all. And so for some reason, that wish came true, and I almost never dream. And I've had some breakthrough, and they tend to be really strange and interesting. And every now and again, I will dream about a character or a storyline, and those are like the dreams I would welcome. If I had more of those, I would be a very happy little author here. But yeah, every now and again they show up in my dreams, and it's pretty exciting.
But they tell you, I mean, you're getting kind of words from,
you know, you might say that as I'm writing, I kind of sink into a sort of dream state almost. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly checking in with them and saying, not only is this what you did? And I talked to them as if all these things really happened because, you know, for them it did.
Mm-hmm.
I said, is this what you did? And is this what you said? And are these the words you would use to describe your experience? And I'd say a lot of my work in the final editing phase is finding their words and saying, would you say it this way?
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. And you have some readings coming up and some around the Lake Geneva, for sure. The Lake Geneva Public Library on Tuesday.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
Tuesday. Tomorrow night at 6.
So tomorrow at 6 at the Lake Geneva Public Library. Then you're at Geneva Gifts on the 17th. And the Milwaukee Public Library on the 18th at 3 p.m., and I should go back to Geneva Gifts from 3 to 5 p.m., where you'll be reading and talking. And then the Coffee Mill in Fontana, Wisconsin, on August 19th. And we still don't know the time yet, but
I've been trying to track that down. She's a very busy lady. I've been stopping in. Is Marianne here? No. Can I leave her a message? Yeah. So it'll probably be in the morning, because that's when they're busy. So if you show up between 9 and noon, I'm saying you've probably hit the target. So,
sounds like you're going to be a few days in Lake Geneva, though.
Yes, I will be. I've been staying in the area. I've been doing my yoga by the lake every morning, and it's been awesome. Nothing more relaxing than that. And I'm here through next weekend and just doing book signings and meeting with people and having a blast.
And your next in the series is coming out in probably another year, roughly.
We're
a
looking
year.
At December 2019, so yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll make a date, and you can come back and visit with us again. Let us know ahead of time, and we'll
I'll try to get you more paper copies.
Yeah, get me paper.
Yeah.
To look at.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
My Danielle. Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Danielle Lincoln Hanna, and she is the author of the Mailboat Suspense series. The first book, The End of the Pier, and the second is The Silver Helm. The Silver Helm is just out, but if you're going to read, I'd suggest starting with book one and going from there. Set in Lake Geneva. Well, coming up, our next author who's going to be with us next is going to be writing about a different lake and some rivers, too. Lake Michigan and three rivers that are really where the city of Milwaukee is built. John Gerda, author next. Here on the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mueller.